Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Susanna Constantine, and this is my Wardrobe Malfunction, the podcast about clothes and their strange habit of making us feel on top of the world one minute and like crawling under a rock the next. If you've joined us before, you can roll your eyes just about now as I mentioned that there are 34 more episodes to discover, with guests including Ashley Roberts, Donna Eyre, Skin, James McVeigh, Francesca Haywood, and Lulu. Okay, you can stop rolling them now. Let's get on to today's guest. She's a singer-songwriter and former member of Girls Aloud, one of the most successful girl bands this century. It's Nadine Coyle. I don't think I ever saw Girls Aloud in the same outfit and always wondered how they managed it. So let's grab the handles, open my wardrobe doors, and find out what's inside. Hello, everybody. Well, today I'm very excited to have my favourite fifth of the amazing band, Girls Aloud. It's Nadine Coyle. My love, you've always been my favourite. And I'm not just saying that because I'm talking to you here, but you always came across as the most natural, the sweetest, without question, with the best vocals. And here you are talking to me, and I'm thrilled.
I'm thrilled. Any time. Thank you for that. That was lovely to hear. I'm a real disaster, as you know, trying to set up this Zoom. I'm like, oh, what am I doing? What am I doing?
We're all like that. Well, you know what? You're not doing computer science. You're a singer. So you're a creative, and you're forgiven for being completely brain dead when it comes to technology. It's fine. All right, my sweet. So, I knew your band really well and the songs, but I was stunned to read that you were the UK's biggest girl band of the 21st century, selling, what was it, over 4.3 million singles and 4 million albums. I mean, that's astonishing.
Wow, that is really, really good. I'm always amazed when I hear the figures back, I'm like, wow. We really did. We worked so hard. So you're just constantly on this kind of treadmill of doing more and more stuff. So you don't have time to look up and think,
yeah,
we're doing really, really well.
Did you ever feel, because I'm just thinking about with Trini and I, we kind of had, you know, we were the sort of first people to do this kind of clothing show that we did. And then we had other people coming along like Gokwan and I can't remember who took over What Not to Wear. I think it was Lisa Butcher and Misha Paris. And we weren't totally happy about that. We felt that they were like magpies coming into our nest, and we were very protective over our brand and what we were doing. Did you ever feel like that with, let's say, the Saturdays or any of, I can't even think of any other girl bands, to be honest, but did you ever feel that kind of like, excuse me, this is our space?
Who do you think you are? Yeah. No, we didn't. It was the Saturdays were from the same record label as what we are.
Okay.
So they were almost kind of there in the wings, and the label kind of thought if any point Girls Aloud kind of implode or we just it all goes, you know, flying apart, that they had a band right there ready to go. They worked with Brian Higgins, who was one of our producers. Mm-hmm. They even had an Irish girl on there.
What's she called? I know her. Oh my goodness. Who's married? Yeah, married to Ben Foden, who is like my brother-in-law by marriage.
Wow.
So yeah, he's my sister-in-law's brother. So yeah, I met Una a few times. She's fantastic. But my darling, going on to clothes, how many different costumes do you think you wore over your time?
Oh, you know, You would have to maybe include the fact that out of the year, we worked probably 330 of them. And that's really, really, that's not exaggerating.
Yeah.
And then you would do multiple things a day. So you would have, especially in those days, you had your smash hits magazines, Top of the Pop mm-hmm. magazines, Sugar, whatever else they're all called. So you would go and you would do your photo shoots and you would wear something different, at least one change of outfit per day. Maybe you would do, Christ. You know, maybe two or three of those, maybe a week, yeah. maybe more. Then you would have maybe a music video and then maybe a show at night. In any one given day, you could be wearing five or six different outfits. So
what was the most? What was the most you wore in a day, do you think?
Oh, my goodness. The most worn in a day. There's probably about seven or eight different outfits. Easily. I mean, more maybe depending on how many things you're trying to cram in and shoot on the one day. And you have to make it look like a different day. So, you know, do this with your hair, this with your hair, and it looks like a whole different day. But a different outfit. So a lot of so many clothes. The stylists, here's a light stylist, would come along with like suitcases almost the size of them, just wheeling them along, just like trolleys full of massive suitcases, bless them.
Did you get to the point where you thought, oh God, I don't care, just give me an outfit? Did you get to that point ever?
Yeah, very, very early on. And, you know, buttons for stuff. I was like, no, I really don't care. I really just pack me a skirt, just throw in a couple of things and I'll throw it on. It really didn't bother me very early on. And then I thought, if I just don't watch it back, then I never have to see what I'm wearing or what I look like. So one.
If you were with me, I'd high five you, my love, because I so have the same sentiment as you. It's just like, oh, for God's sake, just put some clothes on me. Just grab that. It was the most tiring and boring part of the job. But then at the same time, if you did look back or if you felt you looked fantastic, then it makes such a difference to your performance. It must have done. If you put something on, you felt $1 million. It must have made a difference to your performance, didn't it?
It did, definitely. There's, especially if you go very costume, you know, different costumes we wore where it was like military style, but it was a really tight catsuit, very plungy. And I felt like I was some sort of superhero wearing it. So everything changes, you know, the movement, the, you know, the hair, you're just like, wow, I look great. I just know it. I don't even need to see myself. I'm so gorgeous.
And what was the worst costume you ever had to wear? Worst outfit?
There was.
Do you remember?
There was a lot. There was definitely a lot. And sometimes fans I'd still do, you know, 15 years today. It's like, oh, I really should have spent more time getting styled. I should have not just grabbed something and ran out the door. But there was a video, one particular video, when apparently silver was really big. And so we were dressed in silver from head to toe. And I don't know what kind of material it was, but it would rip all the time. So we were constantly getting ripped, and then you get gaffer taped back up again, you know, stick the gaffer tape and off you go. So it was like, well, it's going to look amazing. Yes, we all look ridiculous right now, but we're going to look amazing once this is all put together, and that didn't happen. We looked just as bad. You know, they're like, it's about the green screen. Once we've got the green screen on, it'll all come together. It never came together.
So you look like kind of five turkeys about to go into the oven, wrapped in tinfoil.
Nice. We did. I just completely shell-shocked. I think it was a 26-hour video, and we were just like, you know, and you're just like a robot, like throwing yourself around. Great film, but not a good video.
Darling, where are you now? Are you in Ireland at the moment?
I am in London at the moment.
You're in London, okay?
I'm in London.
Derry, because you grew up in Derry, didn't you?
I did. I grew up in Derry, and then we moved to Donegal when I was a teenager. And so you're kind of on that lovely kind of, Derry's very much on the border anyway. Yeah. So it's kind of that very nice cows and sheep and and that's our neighbours out there.
A nice little rural area. And in your little rural area surrounded by sheep and cows, you started singing at the age of, what was it, 2 or 4 or something?
Really young, yeah. Apparently I started singing. My mum and dad just said that I just started singing in the car one day, but was singing with a really deep voice and doing all these ad-libs. And they were like, what is she doing? So yeah, that's where it began.
And then you never looked back. You carried on. And what happened between then and Girls Aloud?
My dad is a great performer, great actor, great singer, great performer. He produced a lot of shows. So he had done, we always grew up watching my dad in a show. He had produced and directed Grease, but he also played Danny Zuko. So I remember going to see that and very odd, your dad, like, you know, dancing around with, you know, a girl. You're like, oh, you think it's real. Yeah. And then he played Jesus and Jesus Christ Superstar, which was also very traumatic, you know, and they put the part of him on the cross and the lashings. And again, they see your father do that as a child. It's
traumatized. You must have been traumatized.
Very traumatized.
Don't kill him.
They should have just left us at home. Just, you know, just tell us about it. But no, he was really, really good. So my dad, kind of from early on, he got me and my younger sister involved in shows. Okay. So we had done, you know, there were shows about the famine and places that my younger sister done, or pantomimes, or you know, they had big bands that they sang with, big jazz bands. So there was, you know, you'd have a full band with a full horn section and string section. And I was allowed to practice by, you know, singing with them and stuff. So it was a great experience.
Do you play an instrument at all?
Not to where I would play it on, you know, we're singing live. Definitely. Yeah. I'll stick to the singing, but I can play around. If I was writing songs, I can do a little bit, but I would just freeze if I had to play in front of someone and sing. And also I like being with someone on stage. I like being in a band was great for me because you can look at people and be like, oh, you're okay. You know, you turn to the back and there's that, you know, I don't know if you and Tranny had the same thing, just to have someone there going
You always
through.
Have that, looking for your back, always. Always. I'm exactly the same. I hate working alone, you know, except when I'm writing, then I love the isolation and the solitude. But for anything else, I thrive on being with other people and being part of a team.
Yeah, me too. That is my... So anytime that there's any kind of stage stuff, if it has to be with backing tracks, then I'll always have dancers. And if it's an acoustic thing, I'll always have at least, you know, a musician that's a friend that where it's like, we're in this together. It's okay. Yeah. What's the worst that can happen?
Yeah. What was it? If you ever had, what's the kind of worst that has happened? Not in, you know, when you've done a live performance. Has anything terrible happened to you?
Oh, I've fallen off stage.
Nice.
Completely fallen off. And it was one of those where, and it was at the end of the show and it was quite early on. And, you know, you're like loving yourself. You're doing the whole pop star button. You're like, bye, bye, bye. And then I was too busy looking this way. I didn't see the steps going down and flew down the steps, completely disappeared, jumped back up again. Like, it's all fine, it's all fine. And by the time I got to the car, you know, in the pain of just like tumbling down like 5 steps, ow, ow. And we were in somewhere, Wales or somewhere far away, that I had to just sit in the car, just swelling and bruising just the way back.
Oh my God, you poor thing.
But it's okay.
It's all part of it.
Story. Yeah,
exactly. There is that thing when something terrible happens. It's kind of like if I'm in a bad situation or an uncomfortable situation, it's like I'll almost push myself even further into it because in the back of my mind, I'm going, this is going to make such a great story.
yeah. This is going to be funny. This is
this is going to be really good.
Forget about the embarrassment.
Yeah. So, darling one, how who were your style inspirations / icons when you were younger?
I have always loved your kind of the 90s supermodel era. Sandy Crawford, Naomi Campbell, Claudia Schiffer, who I actually saw in a cafe not that long ago. Oh my God, I was like, we were sitting opposite one another, and she was amazing, just like this, like glorious, you know, just like aging within her age, like not getting loads of mess with her, you know, just like. Was like, this is just, you're everything I just wanted you to be. She was amazing. So yeah, I've loved that era of, you know, everything is kind of, you know, the do stuff that fits your body. Nothing,
yeah.
You know, if you've got great legs, show that, or a great chest, or great arms, or great ankles, you know, the female body shape has been the same for so many years. And if you dress to that shape, then, you know, it kind of tends to stay in fashion. Yeah. So I love that.
Absolutely. And then, of course, it was that I always think of that time, and I think of that iconic Vogue cover where they're all naked. I think there's five of them, and taken by Herb Ritts, who, although he was gay, he loved women. And you could really tell, and there was no touching up. There was nothing, like you say, they were completely natural. And such a unit as the most beautiful photograph.
I love that. Yeah, I know. Yeah, love it.
Yeah. So, darling, when you were still at school when you auditioned for the Irish version of Pop Stars, is that right? And you lied about your age, you cheeky little minx. Do you remember dressing up to try and look older for that?
I plan on doing that loads more, by the way.
Good girl.
No, I don't. I'm happy to be the age that I am now.
Yeah.
Aging up this way definitely doesn't bother me. It's almost like a really happy thing. You know, it's like, yeah. I'm glad to see another year. I'm glad because so many people don't, and there's so many bad things that happen. And so it's like, yeah, I hope that I'm really old and wrinkly, and you and I can talk again. Be like, fuck, I'm just like well, an I'm elephant. There.
It's
no,
you're
you know, not.
I am there. I'm there. But my love. Okay, back to clothes.
Yes.
So
you
did Irish Pop Stars, and you when you did that audition, and you were still a wee lass. Did you dress to make yourself look older for that audition?
I looked much older. I looked in my early 20s, from when I was about 13 or 14.
Did your boobs sprout early?
Yes, they did. Okay. Really, really early.
Yeah.
I was quite tall.
How tall are you?
5'6".
Oh, okay. I thought you were a little shrimp.
Yeah, no.
No, you're tall.
I was that tall from basically even younger. So I wore the same school blazer from first year to fifth year, so from 11 to 16.
Wow.
So that's how tall I was at that young age. So I had, I kind of always looked a bit older, so nobody would have questioned. I never had any issues. You know, I'd be walking past bars and stuff with, as a kid, you're out shopping and people are like, come in and have a drink. It's like, I am 12 years old. Like, this is, you know.
You never tempted to go in.
Well, a few funny
stories. Of course you were.
Of course I did. Of course I did.
Yeah.
My friend,
we were young. We all want to look older.
Yeah. So my friend and I, we heard about this nightclub place that everyone went to. So we thought we were going to the nightclub. And me and, you know, my friend were like, and probably, you know, our kind of oldest looking clothes, or, you know, us thinking we're really fancy. And we sat there and we ordered a Bailey's, you know, a Bailey's on ice. The two of us, probably 15 years old. And we sat there and we thought that we were in a nightclub, but we really were in kind of an old man's bar. And we were like, this isn't how we thought a nightclub was going to be like at all. And we weren't there. Yeah, the nightclub was wild and mad and was as it should be. But that is not where we were. that age.
That's hilarious, hilarious. And then, so you did Irish pop stars, and then Louis Walsh encouraged you to do the UK one. Do you remember what you wore for your first audition?
What did I wear? I wore some jeans, like an off-the-shoulder top. Mm-hmm. And my hair is basically exactly the same. I've had varying degrees of this hair for the last 20 years. So it's exactly the same. Very born with a hair.
It's great. And then Girls Aloud was born almost immediately. And you took the world by storm with, was it Sound of the Underground? That was your first hit. Yeah.
Yes, it was. Wow. Well done. It was, that was 2002.
Did the stylist have a kind of image for you? So you went in, and obviously I would imagine who was your producer then? Who was producing you?
Your
manager.
We didn't have a manager, interestingly enough. We didn't have a manager for the first 3 years, probably.
Okay. So did you have an idea of what you wanted to represent and how you wanted to look? So, what your image was going to be?
Yes, it was. I think it was very, all of us were from, four different parts of the UK. All of us with really quite strong personalities. And it was, I think it was just very clear. You hear about all those things. My mom made me watch, movies like Gia. Remember that, when someone had forced drugs upon, the models? And
okay.
My mom had this idea of the music and entertainment agency, that they give you drugs to give you a certain look in your eye. And so she had me petrified that the minute you go and do this, people are going to, give me drugs, and, I'm going to be like, lying. It's just a whole mess. And I didn't know either way either. So I was very, very like, no, I'm not, I don't feel comfortable with that. Or I, would rather not. Or, I had just turned 17 years old. I'd never been anywhere without my parents before. I was a complete child, thinking that I was, not knowing what was going to happen. So, it was very, and then as soon as they had seen, I put a skirt on, and they were like, okay, you'll just wear skirts all the time. We will just not ever buy a pair of trousers for Nadine for the wardrobe. And I kind of stayed that same way for most of the time.
Sorry. Okay. So you were always going to be pushing a skirt, but what was the image that you, was it the kind of girls next door? Was it something a little bit more provocative? Was it girls who always wear black? Was it a bit punky? What was the image? What would you say the image when you started out? Of the band,
the image of Girls Aloud was very much to the song was quite a tough Sound of the Underground is like quite sassy and tough, so everything was kind of, and it was black, but then baby pink, so it was that kind of tough but also soft and feminine. I think mine was suede, so it was a mixture of like leather and pink suede and things like that. So it was kind of bringing everything together to kind of leave the canvas open for where are we going to go next? Who are we? We've just been thrown together. We have a great song. Where is the style journey going to evolve? And it evolved where everyone was able to have their own specific styles. Kimberly, tiny little waist and, hippier, so that, those beautiful, like, smaller waists, those Kimberly, she would always look better in those kind of things. Nicola's more athletic, and she could kind of wear anything, really, just very quite athletic. And Sarah, again, she very kind of curvaceous, but in an athletic way. So everyone had completely different shapes, so we could all wear stuff to flatter our individual shapes, and it was different from the next person. So we would know when we went to a fitting whose clothes were for who. You'd be like, okay, this is for this one. Immediately you would know. There was never an issue of, why would you wear that? Or that looks like it would be better for me. Or there was never ever that kind of complication.
So you said it, like you said just now, that you were thrown together. And do you think you were more like colleagues, or did a friendship grow?
Or was it more of a work thing?
It was really difficult because it's almost quite traumatizing when you're first thrown together. You know, you're living in a new city, you're constantly working. You know, I went from being able to get my dad to write a letter to school, and Nadine doesn't have her homework today because, or Nadine isn't going on a PE trip because, to then, you know, there's a record label involved in TV shows that I've seen on TV, and my dad just can't write a letter to the, you know, the head of ITV and be like, Nadine can't do CDUK today because she's got a sore stomach. You know, no one cares. So it went from, you know, so kind of to get used to all of that, to my parents being, I couldn't do anything without them. I was very much still my parents' child, to then being on this world. And I was devastated for the first while. I thought, what am I doing? My family's lives are moving ahead, and I'm stuck here in a hotel, you know, it's somewhere in London, because I wanted to be a singer, because I thought that this would be a good idea. And now it's strange, you know, I'm gone from everyone that I know and love. So I find it difficult, I think, to kind of to kind of open up, or to accept this new life and accept, you know, whatever was going on. And to, you know, to add to, we were just so busy. The turnaround time from one job to the next was sometimes overnight, might have been 2 or 3 hours. You would have come in from a late show, got showered, got changed, had your clothes laid out, and then you're up 2 or 3 hours later, you know, going somewhere else. So you don't have a lot of time, do you think? So I think I always took it as, when I was there, when I was in London, or I was, you know, that was work. So I'm here to work. This is for a job. And then I go home to my family or to my friends. And I kind of really separated the two things for a long time.
And that must have been very difficult. I mean, it's a bit like a kid being sent off to boarding school or starting university when they've never been away from home. It's really tough. But did you have anyone kind of in your work environment who you could turn to, who you felt was a support? Let's say, I don't know, you hurt yourself or something happened at home and you wanted to share that. Was there anyone like that within the tour or the group?
There might have been, but there might have been. And maybe, you know, for some of it, I didn't rely. I was like, this is a work thing. You have to, you know, go to work. This is, you know, what's expected of me. I have to show up and sing, or, you know, we're not saving the world. This is just, I was, you know, just show up and try to do that and keep your problem. The world has enough problems. I don't need to go bombarding anybody with my problems. I can talk to my mom or my sisters or my, you know, my best friends. So I didn't really even speak to anybody then about those things.
Did the other girls, did they form more of a bond than you did? Because it sounds like you came from a very secure, happy family life with loads of friends at home. I mean, I don't know the history or the biography of the other girls, but I mean, did they bond because they didn't have that domestic backup from in their home life?
I know a lot of, over the years, obviously, you meet everyone's families and you kind of, you know, everybody. And I don't know, I think it took a long time realistically for all of us to bond, because I think everybody's so vulnerable. And then you have that element of the press, and then people start talking to the press and people start saying things. So it's very much kind of, you know, an isolated, because even in a grip, it's quite isolated.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode, and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Yeah, because and also from memory, it's like I always felt like with you girls, the media was trying to pitch you all against each other. Do you know what I mean? There were all these kind of, you were always seen as a whole, but there was always that undertone of, you know, exes, you know, looking better than why. But there was always, they were trying to create trouble within the band.
And you hope, there's glimmers of hope that the world is changing and that the press is changing and that there's, that people are just like, that's just wrong. Mm. It's just wrong to do that. Why try to manipulate situations to put women against each other? Why does that, are we still continuing that narrative? Is that still what's happening? So when we first began, that was absolutely what was happening. That was, you know, they liked the idea of, you know, girls like fighting with each other and the fur flying over a handbag, or that's my hair extension, or, you know, and it's like, you know, chill out, guy. This is, you know, that isn't even in any of our, it's much deeper, the, you know, what's actually happening is children being, and, you know, really young adults being taken away. And I would always feel sorry for, you know, I didn't have the university experience, but I think that must be like university when you're just taken away and, you know, there you're gone and trying to figure out the world for yourself. But then you've got other people's opinions and other people. And from quite early on, it was, you know, people would look at you, but they're like looking at your features, they're looking at your eyes and your nose and your mouth and your hair, and they're not looking at you. And it would happen hair, people would just look at your hair, makeup would just look at your makeup, styling would just look at your clothes, you know, marketing would just look at what the pictures look like, producers would just listen to what it sounded like, choreographers would just listen to, you know, nobody, you're just a, you're like a thing that's got all these, that's kind of rented out all these different parts of yourself for all these people to do, and that becomes their job. So you drift further and further and further away from yourself.
So would you say that during that time you were probably unable to grow up in a way, because everything was done for you and you didn't have to think about anything? So it's kind of, I can imagine that you weren't given the space to kind of grow up and evolve as a woman.
Yeah, it definitely, you're and you're just working so hard and everything's under such a microscope. There's so many people watching, so many things that you do. So I get back into cleaning my house. I watched your shows religiously, and you're styling shows and you're having everything organized, and I was like, you know what, this, I am going to do this. I've got this time at home and I am going to get organized. So I had you know, Mrs. Hinch before, if there had been Instagram then, I would have been Mrs. Hinch as a 17-year-old. I'd make only cleaning products in the different rooms, and I had, you know, I would make, I only knew two things to cook, and it was Irish stew and rice pudding.
So delicious Irish stew.
That would be my Irish stew. Would be my last meal on death row.
Really?
Oh my god, I love it.
So nice. So I used to make that, and we'd get really into. I had, you know, clean bed sheets on like the spare rooms, and anyone that would come, they had their flyers and their towels and their face cloths and their, you know, a little gift. It was like, where in the midst of doing all this, I had all this time to dedicate to doing all these home things that I just wanted to have that when I did come home, it was somewhere that was so nice. You know, I'd done all my own hoovering and bleaching and scrubbing and toothbrush for grout, and And that was kind of my way of, well, this is what you're supposed to do, you know, do.
Yeah.
They grow up and you do this singing thing and then you, you know, you do your cleaning and your cooking and this.
Talk about two different worlds, my goodness. And then, so, but I still find it kind of, you know, when Trini and I, we've travelled all over the world making shows. And, you know, there were times, like, I remember we spent a month in Australia, and which is a long time, and my children were still young. And I had to go into therapy before I left because I was so traumatised about, you know, the thought of having to leave them. But I always felt, well, thank God I've got Trini, who understood. And I was quite a mess on this tour. I really struggled, but she was always there for me. And I could never in a million years have done that on my own without her, and her strength and her love and her care. Did you have that with anyone, any of the girls in the band?
Sarah and I became close after, you know, not that long. But I was like Sarah's big sister. It was like her older sister. No, Sarah, we can't do that. No, we can't do that. No, we have to, you know, get organized this weekend for this. Or no, let's, you know. I was the person that would go on and start going through boxes and cupboards and like, right, we're here. Let's get this. It's what's in this box and let's get this organized. So that was it. And I always had, I got very lucky that there was, you know, I had made, you know, great relationships with some dancers or, you know, hair or makeup or band or PAs, or there was kind of, there was always kind of someone around after a while that I had became really close with, and that we would see each other in work and then outside of work. So it kind of was then, and I'm, you know, still really close to every single one of those people. So it was just, you know, when you meet certain people, you just click and you just immediately head it off. You're like,
And that can't be forced. It's a sense you have, and you can't force that at all.
Yeah.
So when you were touring, or, you know, if you're, well, obviously not traveling now, but did you have anything that represented a comfort blanket for you that came with you everywhere?
I would always bring it. It was one of my dancer friends who had done more tours than I did, and he had said, always bring a travel candle. So a candle that you light at home, and then you have that be your smell and your scent. And then you get to hotels and you light it. You get to your dressing room and you light it. So you're bringing a sense of familiarity that you can bring in a little candle everywhere you go. And I love that. And, you know, God forbid I was out without, you know, a mobile phone to be able to call my mom and my sisters. And, you know, phone bills were just, after we were in Australia for a month and I had a £1,500 phone bill from calling back home, and I was like, "Who are you talking to?" He's like, "I know." And they're just, and, you know, they would stay up because they're like, right, you know, she's in Australia, or, you know, get up about, or whatever it was, just so as we could, you know, have those times. And really, really, that was it. I'm not big on the possessions at all. I'm really, it's like, it's, this is, you know, it's fine.
Yeah, and I think that's, well, it's very healthy. I think it's very healthy not to put too much, you know, attachment to things, because then if you lose them, you're crushed. But you, what about your Barbie? Because you all had Barbie dolls made of you, and you designed the outfit for your Barbie. So what was that?
Mine was a very classic white dress with a little shawl number. I was thinking Barbie going to a ball. A little slutty, though, for, you know, a little shorter. Very low and very high. I was like, but yeah, and you would think that I would have one of those Barbies. And yet, I don't even have one of those Barbies. There's pictures on the internet, and that'll just have to do.
I know. You've got to have a Barbie.
I know, it's so bad, isn't it?
You have to get one of those Barbies.
Do you have a is it a son or daughter that you have?
I have a daughter.
Well, she's got to have that Barbie, Nadine, for God's sake. You've got to get it.
I'm going to have
to go on eBay and see if you can find one.
Yeah, I will, because it is a disgrace, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's a travesty. So, my darling, did you have, because with all the concerts and all the red carpets you must have traipsed down, did you ever have a situation where your clothing really let you down? I sound a bit Irish then. When your clothing really let you down, i.e. a major wardrobe malfunction.
I have had on stage where clothes have ripped, where just the thing just gave way. What would, you know, and this would happen a lot. So you would do tour, and you're in tour shape, you've been rehearsing, dancers are throwing you around, you're in, shape of your life, and then you get under your costumes and it's great, and then you do the tour, and then because your body's kind of plateauing at the routines, you're just enjoying catering, so things are loosening up a bit. Well, the body's loosening, the clothes are getting tighter. And then we would take maybe a week or two off and then come back to do summer festivals, but mm-hmm. basically use the same tour costumes. So always see getting under those tour costumes after you're fitted under them when you're in, really good shape. And you just know, it's like, the stylist would just have like rolls of gaffer tape just on the side, just knowing whoever's going to walk off and just, turn around or bend over. Hi. And just the gaffer tape is just out. It's just stuck together just at an instant. And so I've had that loads where, yeah.
Oh, my God. So my husband's just walked in.
Oh.
Okay, we'll let that go. I was like, why can't he fucking go the other way? So after did you move to LA after Girls Aloud or during?
During. So kind of just a few years under Girls Aloud, probably. So 2002, so it's probably 2005. My family and all moved to LA. So mom, dad, two sisters, my older sister's husband there, three kids. Everybody moved to Orange County for a new adventure. I mean, my parents at this stage were almost 50. They had never really been out of Ireland. We'd been to Spain or, a few different places, but never anywhere at length to try out somewhere, to try out a new place. So mm-hmm. we thought, let's just give it a go. I rented a house. I think it was January or February when it was miserable at home, and they came and stayed. There was a swimming pool there, and I kind of was like, we could live like this all the time. Look at this. Wow. And then reluctantly, some of them wanted to do it more than others. And then kind of everyone got on board and wanted to mm-hmm. do it. And then we lived in Huntington Beach in California
mm-hmm.
and we had a restaurant there in Sunset Beach. So it wasn't kind of your LA Hollywood, let's do Hollywood. It was, we're, in the Brighton of, LA. And that's where mm-hmm. we are versus the kind of whatever madness was going on. So we lived right by the beach.
Fantastic. Our
restaurant was by the beach. Everyone, my sister had her fourth, child over there. We worked together as a family. I commuted. I still worked with Girls Aloud. So my day job mm-hmm. was in the UK. So I would kind of be over and back. But I had to fly to go to Ireland to see them anyway. So I'll just fly to LA instead. Why not?
Mm. So the band split up in 2013, and there was some controversy over the split. Did you plan the split, or did you all plan it and say, okay, we've done it for a long time, we're going to leave on a high? How did it happen?
Oh, no. I mean, there was not a discussion. To do that, and I've always thought it's a fun, it's a great experience. There's really no need to kind of make anything final or to do anything like that. But I think some of the rest of the girls were just kind of over it, and we had a break before that. So to go back to that pace of working and that scrutiny, I think people were like, oh, forget this. Like, I can work less and still have a good quality of life and not have to kind of be part of this madness all the time, which is fair enough. However, you know, you don't want to torture anybody. So however anybody was happy.
Would you ever do a reunion tour?
Well, that's always a conversation. There's always like, you should do a reunion tour. And what's wild is in 2022, it'll be 20 years since we've been together. I know, 20
years. Oh, my God.
In 2 years' time. I know.
That makes me feel so old. My God.
It's, wow. It's crazy. And you'd be doing stuff, you know, and you'd be talking to people, and people are like, you know, especially Americans and, you know, a lot of like, you know, people you're dealing with, like, I've been doing this for 10 years. And it's like, I've been doing this for almost 20 years. It's like, yes, you might be 60 and I'm still on my 30, but I just started so young. And it means that you just kind of cram so much stuff in, and then you're like, oh, you've been doing this in nearly 20 years.
You've been very busy since then with your solo career and being a mum. Mm-hmm. Who is, how old is she? She must be
six. Yes, oh my God. Six.
Oh my God. And did becoming a mum change your attitude to clothes? Your body changes shape, obviously, but did you sort of think, okay, you know, I have to dress more like a mum?
You know, it's funny you said that, and I've never really spoken about this. I had a real freak out moment. I started buying these clothes. We would go to this lovely place called Fashion Island in Newport Beach. It's kind of an outdoor mall, walking around, and I just got into, you know, going there and shopping, and there was this one shop and they had these lovely summer things, and it was kind of really low cut and, you know, very orange, very Huntington Beach, you know, I live on the beach kind of clothes, all very kind of loose stuff.
Boho, yeah.
Boho, you know, not covered up, really, a lot of the stuff. And I remember going shopping, and I went down to the shop, and I looked at everything that was on the mannequins, and I wasn't showing or anything at this point. And I was like, I can't wear any of these clothes anymore. This is it. I just can't buy anything from the shop anymore because I'm now a mother, and I couldn't possibly wear a vest. And I think it was just like hormones and everything. It was like, you know, it felt for a moment that side of life, you know, was going to go. And I was going to have to, you know, cut my hair short, dye it blue, and wear long skirts and Jesus sandals. You know, it was like that forever, you know, for maybe half an hour, I really fully thought. And every time, like, I see that shop now, I'm like, takes me back to thinking, remember how scared I was for a time. But then it was I think it's hilarious because when I'm at home, I wear so many clothes. Like, I've got this top on now, but right underneath there's like a very thick pair of Abercrombie and Fitch tracksuit bottoms and some socks, some gray bed socks.
Nice.
So I walk around at home constantly covered with so many clothes. And then I go out to work and they hand me these tiny little skimpy little outfits. And I'm like, couldn't wear that. Couldn't wear that. And then And then it's like in the privacy of my own home, I'm covered from head to toe. And then, you know, in front of strangers, then I wear hardly any clothes. And there's definitely something odd with that.
Two Nadines. And then, living in LA for nearly a decade, were you ever tempted to go down the cosmetic surgery route?
No. And I'll tell you for why. Because I had, I'd seen so many people that had so much work done. So what I would find was they would get everything done. I wrote a song about it one time and then I thought, I can't put this song out. It's too offensive. But they would get all this surgery done and then run around in a velour tracksuit and a pair of Ugg boots. And it's like, well, if you were to put on something, you know, like, do you, you know, feel good about what you were wearing or feel that would give you the confidence rather than having to get your nose shaved or your chin done or your lips done or your cheeks done or and you would find that a lot of them ended up looking the same. I would meet somebody.
Exactly.
And then meet somebody else and think, have we met before? I'm sure we've met. I'm sure I was just talking to you yesterday or last week. And it was the work. So people end up looking like copies of each other rather than seeing.
Yeah.
And not only copies, but I think it can make you look a lot older. If you have it done too young, you look older. So let's say you got a woman who's 60 who's had a facelift and a tit lift and a fucking fanny lift. The girl of 22 who's been to the same surgeon will end up looking like the bloody 60-year-old.
Yeah, you're totally right. Because you see someone and it can be, you know, someone comes in, a girl or a guy, you know, getting stuff done, and you're like, those cheeks have definitely been pumped up.
And it's then so you're like, obvious.
Then you're like, is that the real nose? Them lips, is that their lips? Yeah. And then you're like, are they 60 or are they 25 or are they 40 or are they, you know, so there comes just this one look of you've had this work done and kind of you don't know what kind of age anybody else. And I don't think there's anything wrong. It's interesting to see how your face is going to change and how you're going to, I hope. We're like this.
Yeah, no.
Hey,
but you're right. I mean, it takes a strong woman, I think, today not to fall into that trap, because as women, we all compare ourselves with each other. And it's something that I've never gone down that route, mainly because I'm too lazy. But I did have Botox once and I felt so claustrophobic because I couldn't move my face. I felt like I was in this straitjacket or something. And I just thought, fucking hell, never again am I gonna do that. And I haven't. And sometimes I kind of regret it because I know that, you know, maybe I wouldn't have, like you saying, little pouches here. And then I think, you know what? I'm 58 years old. It's not about how I look anymore. It's about who I am as a person. And that sounds such a cliche. But that I think for a woman to get to that point, that's her goal when she gets older, is just to be proud of the person you are and screw how you look.
That there was like a story. I was really young, like a teenager, and I was driving to the airport and I thought, oh, I have to have, you know, a bit of makeup on as first thing in the morning. And I was drawing on like lip liner, and whatever way the car moved, the liner went up here.
Lovely.
And I just sat there for a second and I was like, right, how do I feel? It was like, I feel fine. This lip liner on my face has no effect on me and how I feel whatsoever. But it's other people will see it and then they'll look at me and they'll be like, that girl has lip liner all up the side of her face. And then I was like, who are these people? Do I know these people? Do I really mind what these people? So am I really worried about what I think? Because I don't mind the lip liner. I don't see it. There's no relevance to my life whatsoever. I don't actually have to look at myself. It's only how other people will treat me because they see. I was like, wow. It's like I should leave it on. I should just for fun. And my mommy was like, take that lip liner off your face. You look ridiculous. It's like, okay. But I had a whole profound point going on here, mommy. This was really
Oh God. But I love you for that. And I think, you know, you'll grow old gracefully or disgracefully, probably.
I hope so.
In many ways. But in terms of visually, you're going to grow old gracefully. You know what? But just all I can say, one bit of advice, okay?
Yeah.
I'm probably the same age as your mum. One bit of advice, don't ever look at yourself and think, shit, look at my fat ass, look at my this, look at my cellulite, look at that. Because why in the movie 10 years forward and you're going to go, you see a picture of yourself in the previous decade, you think, my God, I was so gorgeous then. So enjoy it now.
Yes, I will.
So, darling, your birthday suit is what I want to know about now, not the one you were born with.
Okay.
If you were going to reach, you were going to, I don't know, the Brits, and you didn't have a stylist, what would you wear? What would be your, what do you feel most gorgeous in? what kind of look?
Most gorgeous. You see, and it's changed over time, because most gorgeous used to be, give me a short skirt, the shorter the better, short and tight, and a long dry, and a pair of high heels, and any color, and I'll go and feel fine. Big, big high heels, short dress. I'm embarrassed, and it's not, I'm like, I can't walk as well as I could before in high heels. I'm really, especially with everything that's happened in the last year, I went to Strictly last week to see Jason, wore some high heels, was beside myself with excitement, and then spent the whole time like this, like looking at the floor, and one of those really awkward people that you think, you should not be wearing high heels. You would look much more comfortable and elegant with, with a smaller heel and you're kind of like walking like this and it just takes away from the whole look. So I would say no, today could change next week. I may be back under the short and the high heel. But I would wear some like leather trousers, like a tight pair of trousers. I like an off the shoulder or something. You just feel fancy. You're like shoulder to shoulder without actually having to show anything. And a pair of sensible shoes, a bit of a heel, not too much, but something where I could walk and, maybe run if I needed to, or, not run, but, walk quickly.
Yeah.
If it rained or something, without thinking, I'm going to land in a heap in the floor and I'm really going to hurt myself. So I'm afraid. So that would be my...
off the shoulder top and a pair of fantastically tight, sexy leather trousers.
Yes.
Nice.
Definitely.
All right, darling. So what's next for you now?
Next for me is I'm doing some TV this week, some TV things, which is, it's always nice to do something. I'm doing a little bit of singing for a new show that's coming out next year, I think. I think it's coming next year. So I have a little bit of singing to do in that. Something tomorrow. Just generally, there's no live. Live has been my biggest, the thing that's kept me most busy for the last, 5-6 years. All the theaters are closed and there's no festivals and even Christmas stuff, it's always great at Christmas because you're like, we're off spreading Christmas cheer, singing Christmas songs, and there'll be none of that.
Yeah, there's nothing. But you know what? Having spoken to you today, my darling, I feel so much better. You are a bundle of joy. You're gorgeous. You're down to earth. You're super talented. And I'm so pleased you're doing television, because I think you could do very well on TV, because you're just you. There's no pretense with you. And audiences are so savvy at knowing when someone's putting on a persona. And I don't think you could ever do that. You're a woman who wears her heart on her sleeve, and I love you for that.
Oh, you're so sweet. You're going to make me cry. That is so nice, Susanna. Thank you.
It's my pleasure.
Chatting to me.
It's been really lovely. Thank you so much, my darling. And you take care.
Thank you. You take care too.
And hopefully
again soon.
Yeah, let's, our paths will cross somewhere.
Yes, somewhere. All right, take care of yourself.
All right, and you, Hanban. Biggest kiss.
Bye.
Oh, thanks so much to Nadine. I'd never met her before, but I thought she was an absolute delight. Right, a couple of quick things before we go. First, remember to join our pajama party, the place where you tell me about your own clothing calamities. Find it on our website at mywardmal.com and email any stories to help@mywardmal.com. You can also find and follow us on the usual socials at mywardmal and rate and review us if you like what you've heard, or quietly forget if you didn't. Finally, thanks to our tremendous house band Duo. Find and buy their new album at duoguitarmusic.com or at Duo Guitar Music on their socials. Thanks again to Nadine, and of course, thanks to you for listening. Catch up soon. Until then, my wardrobe is officially closed.
ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.